If you have ADHD or suspect you do, you might believe there's nothing you can do about your symptoms other than taking medication. But medication can only do so much. And the uncomfortable truth is that our habits and lifestyle can make our ADHD so much worse, with or without meds. To break this down, I'm joined today by my friend Alan P. Brown. He's the creator of the award-winning ADD Crusher program, a best-selling author, conference and TEDx speaker, and successful serial entrepreneur with ADHD. Alan is also a former addict who knows all too well the price we pay when we aren't paying attention to our ADHD and our habits. So, Alan, because we both have ADHD and work with people who do, we know that there are things that we can do that make our ADHD a little better or more manageable, and there are things that most of us do that make it a whole lot worse. We're going to talk about several of them today, and I want to start with the one that you know a great deal about and have a lot to share with us, and that is sugar.
Sugar. Well, first, thanks for having me. Great to be here with you. So what goes along with sugar is simple carbs. And, you know, ironically, glucose is our brain's fuel.
Right.
But we need to deliver the glucose in the right way. And the right way to deliver sugar is not by snacking on sweets or cookies or, for that matter, simple carbs, pretzels, all that stuff. The carbohydrates are sugars. So what happens when we're snacking on that stuff, let alone having a meal of that stuff with no significant protein, is that our brain gets fired up because the glucose goes straight to our brain. And then we get this sort of, okay, yeah, and then we crash. But the way to extend that delivery curve of the glucose is to always have protein snacks with fiber and maybe a little bit of sugar in that fiber. So example, I've got a bag in my backpack right over here. I've got a bag of raw nuts, pure protein, bunch of other good stuff, but also some dried fruit in there. So I'm getting a little bit of glucose. And I always say that sugar sucks, carbs kill, protein is power, and omegas are omega. And you get a lot of omegas with the nuts. So that's sort of the headline there. Long headline, but that's the headline on it.
But you and I both know that simple carbohydrates, and especially sugars, they wreak havoc with their body, mind, and brain. But they're also super, super addictive. In your experience, are people with ADHD more prone to get legitimately addicted to sugar and simple carbs than other people, or is that just one of the myths that gets thrown around?
You know, I don't know if I've got any empirical sightings I could do, but I will say this. Think about the fact that our brains lack the available dopamine to have our brains keep going and keep churning and keep running.
Yeah.
And a quick way to get a little burst of energy is a snack like pretzels or sugar or whatever. And so we are more likely to reach for that stuff more often because we're always looking for something to get our brains going. And if we've got crappy food in our house, we will consume it. The trick is, and this is another reason why we ADDers tend to sort of rely on these kinds of snacks. Proteins are more expensive.
Yep.
They're generally less shelf stable, right? If you think of meats and eggs and stuff like that, which is why I love raw nuts. But they're also more difficult to prepare. You have to actually do something with them a lot of times.
Yeah.
And so the difference between going to my fridge and making a roast beef sandwich or something, you know, protein full with some fiber, et cetera, versus just going to the pantry and grabbing something that's in there, big difference.
Yeah.
One's easy, one's hard. One gives us an immediate little boost, but the other one gives us a longer boost. It extends the protein and the fiber, extend the delivery curve of the glucose, as I mentioned. So there are a lot of reasons why we may tend to be more vulnerable to the sugar monster and the simple carb monster.
It makes sense. I mean, we're going to go for the immediate gratification.
Yes.
And tend not to think about the long-term consequences. And once that becomes your habit, I mean, you and I both help people with habits quite a bit. Once it's your habit, you might kind of know in the back of your mind, I could go get a couple of hard-boiled eggs. I've already made them. Or I could have a Snickers bar. Most of the time, we're going to go with Snickers bar, right?
Yeah, and you know, you just mentioned something great, which is hard-boiled eggs. And because we know that protein can be more difficult to keep fresh and to have at the ready, I advocate for folks to do is maintain a supply of portable proteins.
Exactly.
Right? So just a few quick examples. I've got these in the fridge, in the pantry, et cetera. So protein bars, obviously, mm-hmm. right? There are some crappy ones. Look for the good quality ones. But also hard-boiled eggs is a great thing. If you just take the 15 minutes it takes to hard-boil 8 eggs and keep those in the fridge, when you get hungry, don't go for the bag of chips. Go for one hard-boiled egg. That's like 6 grams of protein right there. Mm-hmm. But I keep apples and bananas around because when I'm hungry and it's not mealtime, I slice up an apple or peel a banana and I just slather it with peanut butter.
Yeah.
Maybe sprinkle some hemp seeds or some pepitas, maybe a drizzle of honey. And that fills you up. It gives you the gut fill feel. And there are a whole bunch of other portable proteins. So I just invite everyone to take a look in your pantry and your fridge and see if there are some things that, first of all, are crap, and then take them off your grocery list. Just take them off the list. But also, just look for some simple things that you can have on hand. A jar of peanut butter is a miracle worker in this area. So think about making sure you have that on hand. So when you do get hungry, you're not reaching for the crap, and you're reaching for something that will sustain your mental energy.
Yep. And you know what? The thing is being prepared ahead of time, which folks with ADHD are not always so good at. You know, we are the kings and queens of good intentions, but we don't always follow through. So a couple of things you said were have it prepared ahead of time. And, you know, you can have some of the things that I like to rely on, the nuts, absolutely. An avocado sliced and ready ahead of time, hard boiled eggs, string cheese, an apple. These are things that don't take really but a few seconds more than ripping open your Heath bar or whatever, but they're going to give you more sustainable. And the other thing is, like, if it's not in your house, if it's not in your desk drawer, if it's not in your fridge, if it's not in your pantry, the time it would take for you to get in your car, drive down to 7-Eleven or Walmart or wherever, or worse, have DoorDash bring you some junk, you could have probably made a freaking omelet or, you know, made that roast beef sandwich that you talked about. So think ahead and plan. Just expect that you're going to go for the immediate gratification. You're going to go for the quick hit. You're going to go for the thing that is easiest, and don't make it so easy, right?
Yeah. And something you said in there just reiterates a rule of thumb that I have. If it's not in your house, you're not going to eat it. So stop bringing it into your house. This may be difficult for a family with kids, teens, et cetera, but you can also help them to reduce their consumption of sugar and simple carbs. But yeah, just don't bring it into the house if you can help it.
Yep. Now, when we talk about sugar, we're talking about, you know, carbs and proteins and trying to help our ADHD not be worse by the things that we put in our body. Let's talk about other things we do with our body, like movement. Sometimes I have to be really careful not to use the word exercise because for some people that's triggering, but we can all move our body and there are a lot of benefits to our brain when we do. Can we talk about that for a minute?
Absolutely. And you know, the exercise is, as I see it, there are three legs of the stool, of the healthy stool, and that is diet, sleep, and exercise, these three. And so, yeah, indeed, I'm glad you want to talk about exercise because it goes hand in hand with a better diet and more protein, et cetera. And I'll just give you a few of the quick benefits of exercise. Not that people don't know these things, but exercise actually helps grow a part of our brain, the hippocampus, that is associated with memory and mental acuity. There's been a lot of research done on this. Actually, to quote Dr. John Rady, co-author of Delivered from Distraction, or rather, Driven to Distraction
was the
And then he wrote a book called Spark, and this is where he brought this forth. He says that exercise creates a brain chemical that acts like miracle grow for the brain, and it's called BDNF. Brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And that's what happens when you exercise. Ideally, you're doing 20 minutes or so of something, some serious movement, 3 times a week or so. But any movement is better than none. And the great thing about exercise is that it works both near-term and long-term. And what I mean by that is if you start to exercise, let's just say right now you maybe take a walk a few times a week, maybe when you take the dogs out or whatever, but you know you'd like to get more done. And I'm not talking about going to a gym. That's a whole other ball of wax, right? Yeah. If you can do that or you're doing that, keep doing that. But let's just talk about upping your cardio a little bit. If you want to maybe try to break a sweat a few times a week. You get the long-term benefit if you're just going to be healthier and generally psychologically happier. But you'll also get a near-term benefit, which means you will have more mental acuity, better focus, and a better general mood or outlook by just doing these things. And I'm not going to bore you with all the research, but I think you can trust me when I say there is so much research that supports this. So if you're not getting out and moving on a pretty regular basis, consider getting your leveling up a little bit. I just want to share real quick the way to get started or restart on exercise. And this is something that I do a lot of group coaching. I have 9 different coaching groups. And so everyone in these groups, this is including masterminds for coaches, and they fight the same fights that we all do. Mm-hmm. I talk often about making sure that when we're trying to get back on the pony of exercise, let's say, or we haven't been doing anything for a number of years. One of my clients is just sort of realizing, my goodness, I'm 64. I haven't been doing anything. Whether you're starting or restarting, here's the trick. Forget about, I should do this or I should be able to do that. Forget about, I'm going to get a trainer and go to the gym. If you can get a trainer that helps with your accountability, that's great. But don't get magical thinking on it. Just start with whatever is small and easy. There's a wonderful sort of matrix. It's not really a matrix. It's an XY axis that BJ Fogg at Stanford, who's a behavioral researcher, he talks about. On one axis, we've got motivation, right? If we want to get into action, we can try to increase or find our motivation, right? But the other way at it is to make something easier, right?
Yes.
So if you've got something for which you're highly motivated and it's really hard, you might be able to get into action. You might be far enough up that way. But if you're not that motivated and it's really hard, you're not going to get above what he calls the action curve. You're not going to get up there to that part of the But if you have little motivation, and you can figure out a way to make it easier. Yeah. Now you can get out there into that section. Okay, so hopefully my little hands did the job. And if you're not on video, just imagine what I'm doing. Still, my language hopefully conveyed that. So what's an easy way to start doing something? Again, don't do the I should be able to thing. Do the what am I willing to do? So for instance, I'm not willing to go run another half marathon. I did it once. I'm not willing to do it again. All right. God bless you folks that run marathons. I've got a dear buddy who's a racing buddy of mine who is an Ironman. Mm-hmm. Crazy. He's willing to do it. I'm not. But identify what you are willing to do. And so I am willing to do what I do, which is I won't get into that. But if you are willing to get out and walk around the block 3 times based on, you know, a starting point of really kind of doing nothing, if you're willing to do that, then get out and just do that. Don't worry about the gym. Don't worry about going and buying the gear or the machine or whatever. Just start with what you're willing to do, anything small and easy. That's my little shtick on exercise.
I love that, Alan, because, you know, I think about the 2 X's. For me, it's able and willing. What am I able to do? Some people have different physical limitations. And so what am I able to do? Here's your list. What am I willing to do? And that is going to change probably from one day to the next. You just got off a plane like you did. You're not going to be either able or willing to do as much. You're well rested. You're going to be able to do more. And so this idea that I have to do this particular activity 3 times a week for 30 minutes, or I have to go to the gym and take this class or lift these weights or whatever, it can vary. I think, you know, I like to think of an optimal amount of exercise that I'd like to get every day or every other day. And then what's the minimal amount? Because I have so many people who will say, well, that doesn't even count. So this notion that that's not enough to count, but I'm not willing to do the amount that does count. Don't put yourself in that double bind. It's like everything counts. That's one of my slogans. Everything counts. So if you're able and willing to, instead of taking the dog down the driveway and back, go for 1/2 mile and pick up the pace a little bit. You're able to do that. You're willing to do that. It counts. Maybe next week you're willing and able to do more than that, but we don't need to box ourselves in. And I love that you say, you know, just go with that one small thing. And if it's enough, it's enough. And if it adds up, it adds up. Sometimes when we get started, we don't feel like stopping. So we end up doing a lot more than we planned on.
I mean, you know, talk about a limiting belief. Why bother? It's not going to be enough. I'll tell you what's enough or what the minimum is. The minimum is just doing a little bit more than what you're doing now. Mm. That's it. And you just keep doing a little bit more. And over time, you get to where I'm at now. I'm working out 6 times a week. And the main reason is not because I'm trying to be sexy or grow big muscles or because I'm willing. And I do have a trick for being willing. We'll get into that maybe later. But what the result is that when I'm not exercising for 2 days, which is very, very rare, I can feel it in my brain. Mm. I need more Ritalin. I am not as focused. My mood can change. So just do a little bit more than what you're doing now and start tiny anywhere. Start tiny anywhere.
I also like that you call it start or restart, because it acknowledges the fact that we get in our heads and we interfere with what we're even able and willing to do by thinking, oh my God, I'm such a jerk. I haven't done this in so long. I'm probably going to hurt myself. Who am I kidding? This is only going to last for 2 weeks and then I'm just going to quit like always. Like wherever you are, you're either starting or restarting. It doesn't matter how many times you've stopped. You didn't even bring stop into the equation. So it's really, really practical, realistic, and solution focused. So we're talking about sugar and all the nasty things it can do to your brain and really how much easier it is to do something better by not having it around and realizing that whatever benefit you think you're getting from sugar is very temporary and the consequences are more lasting. But I find that the biggest struggle for most of us with ADHD, even if we've got what we're putting in our mouth a little bit under control, is sleep. Sleep is like one of the other S's that you talk about that I think probably messes people's ADHD up more than anything else.
You know, I think that is empirically true. If you think about this, when we are sleep deprived, we're not getting enough sleep, we're staying up late, and we'll get into some
why
of
we do that.
Classic behaviors. The next day, we're less likely to exercise. We are more likely to grab a sweet or crunchy snack because we have less willpower, less motivation for things. Mm-hmm. But when we get consistent 7 to 8 hours of sleep every night, we're just in generally better shape, quote unquote, every day. And let's just acknowledge something that some of our listeners may know, and I'm sure you're aware of it, which is that ADHD and sleep deprivation are often confused in diagnosing each one. Because the symptoms look very, very similar. Mm-hmm. Inability to focus, inability to plan and see, you know, linearly out into the future, all kinds of it affects executive function. And I tell you, with the folks that I coach, biggest issue regarding sleep is the pre-bedtime hygiene. Devices, the revenge procrastination, FOMO. And I want to circle back to this when we talk about the third thing we're all doing that makes our ADHD worse. And there's another thing that's known as the ADHD second wind that a lot of ADHDers get at like 10, 11 p.m. Yes. They get this additional burst of energy. And they're, well, I got the energy. I might as well start doing something.
Yeah.
I got to use it. Yeah. That's dangerous.
Well, both you and I are fans of Andrew Huberman's podcast and his approach. And he's a very well-known and well-respected guy. He's got some pretty interesting things to share about sleep. Which ones would you like to talk about?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. You mentioned I just got back from a trip. I was in Japan, and on the way in the entertainment, you know, they got every movie, of course, on the plane. But they had this series of videos by Andrew Huberman, and he did this whole thing on sleep. You know, much of this I already knew, but it was really neat to be able to sit on a plane and just watch Andrew Huberman talk about. And of course, everything he's talking about, he's at MIT, he runs the Huberman Lab, and it's all evidence-based. It's all based on research, and this guy vets it all. So he talks about the key sleep factors, and he talks about light and dark, food and timing thereof. He talks about supplements and a bunch of other things. But I thought I would just touch on a few of the most important and immediately actionable ones. So, for instance, light and dark. Needless to say, our circadian rhythm follows light and dark, right? So when the sun is going down, our body, our circadian rhythm says, hey, let's stop producing cortisol and start producing melatonin. Great. When the sun is coming up, that's when our brain is saying, hey, let's stop producing melatonin and let's start in with the cortisol. And so when we are not obeying that, which is hard, you know, these days we're up until 10 o'clock. We're no longer an agrarian society where we just had to get out and work at sunrise and we stopped working at sunset, et cetera. So understandable. But we can make it a lot worse when we're really messing with that, when we're sleeping in late, when we are staying up to all hours, et cetera, et cetera. So a couple of things that he offers to help you stick with your, to honor your circadian rhythm I guess is the way to say it, is he says, within 30 to 60 minutes of waking, get some direct sunlight exposure outdoors, not through glass, which will signal your clock that daytime has begun. I think he goes further and he talks about ideally looking into the sky toward the sun when the sun is still lower in the sky and it's providing sunlight at an angle. There's something about that that he doesn't get into, but I'll trust him on that. And then another great thing is just dimming your lights. I used to have a reminder in my phone, just said, lights down. 8:30 at night would pop up, lights down. Okay, let's stop. So now I don't have that anymore. I now have a thing that just says media over. So we watch maybe 1 hour tops of TV every night. That's another thing. And we'll talk about screen sucking.
Second, right? Let's segue into that then, because I think what's so interesting about all of this, and we want to make it easy for listeners with sugar, sleep, screen sucking, because it makes it more memorable. And what we remember, we're more likely to do something about. But all these things really go together, don't they? Like you've been saying, when you aren't getting enough sleep, you're more likely to reach for the sugar. When you're staying up late and you're not well rested, you're not going to be well focused. You're going to be more irritable. Your executive functioning is going to be more impaired. You're going to have
be less likely to work out.
You're going to have more problems with regulating your emotions. But also, like, one of the things that we're doing when we're staying up late, when we're not respecting our body, mind, and brain's need for more rest and sleep, what are we usually doing at that time that's a third S and just as damaging, if not more so? Screen sucking, right?
Yeah, let's dive into that one, man. This is a big one. This is the third. And I'm glad you pointed out the alliteration. I didn't even realize, you know, sugar, sleep, and screen sucking. You're an alliteration fan.
So I am. Because I've got such a terrible memory, Alan. So if I put things into an acronym or some kind of alliteration, I've at least got a slim hope of remembering it later and having other people remember it later.
Yeah, I may use them too much, but it's fun to use them. All right. So indeed, screen sucking takes us right back to the sleep issue, particularly as so many of our clients are abusing their screens at night. Right? That is what should be our bedtime. And of course, Huberman talks about basic sleep hygiene, et cetera. And he talks about things like, you know, timing your caffeine, not having late meals, watching out for alcohol, cutting off your liquids at a certain point so you're not with it. But screen sucking is just massive and really is. I would say that 70% of the folks that I work with have some issue of screen sucking in the evening. There's also just general screen sucking. There's also
throughout the day, right?
Yeah, throughout the day. You know, someone once coined the phrase for television, the great preventer. And you think about the prevention, the things that are being prevented by all of our social media, et cetera. I know everybody knows this. I'm not going to get judgy on it. I just want to say real quick, long ago, I took all of the social media apps off of my phone, except for Instagram, because I do have a couple of professional accounts there. Yeah. But I started to abuse it, meaning I was now getting news through it. I was watching too much motorcycle racing stuff and yada, yada, yada. And so a couple of weeks ago, I just took it off my phone. It's not completely deleted. I can go search for it if I want. But I took it off my phone and I just freed up probably 20 minutes a day. I never was an abuser of it, but 20 minutes a day, man, I'll take 20 minutes a day. But what happens for most human beings probably is that we will go, okay, and you know, I don't know if I'm on camera or not, but I'm holding up my phone here.
Yeah.
And what we'll do is we'll go, okay, I need a break, and we'll just grab for our phone, right? Because we want to check to see if any text came over. But then, you know, we'll look at our apps available and we might go, you know what? I need a little break. So let me give myself a little break and then I'll get back to my work. And here's why.
I just need to do this one little thing.
Yes. Or I'm just going to take a break and read some news.
Yes.
Or I'm going to take a break and just do a little bit of Instagram or TikTok.
These are
not restful. They don't give us a break. Mm. They drain energy.
Yeah.
They jack up and turn off the dopamine circuit. You know, so it reinforces our dopamine addiction, all this. And so we end up not getting any rest from this, and we are then less likely to return to the work we were doing. Mm-hmm. So I know it's a big ask, but do consider becoming aware of the fact that we tend to reach for our phones reflexively, right? Okay. Especially when we need a break from something, we need some quote unquote relief. And consider instead something that's restorative. I call these restorative breaks, right? Instead of a break that's actually not restoring anything, it's just burning more energy, consider When you need a break from a work session, get up and walk around.
Yeah.
Just walk around.
Yep.
Get up, walk around the block. Get up. I do this a few times a week. Get out and just go outside and pull three weeds. I'm not joking. Instead of getting on, just go pull three weeds. Come back.
Or go pick up, some dog stretch. Poop, because there are always people who don't pick up their own dog's poop.
I thought about putting a sign on my lawn next to the dump that somebody left and that said, I'm from New Jersey, so I don't even want to say what I was going to say. But anyway, I'll catch that guy one of these days. All right. Oh, and then there'll be a baseball bat involved. Okay. So anyway, this is a great opportunity to extend your work sessions, to get more done. And I'm not exaggerating, to make your to-do list smaller by not going to this device or to your browser windows when you need a break. If you need a break, you need a break. You want to drive more oxygen to your brain by getting up and moving. It could be just stretching. It could be walking around the block. It could be whatever. It could be just lying down for 10 minutes. Set a time for 10 minutes. Put a pillow over your face. You don't have to fall asleep. Just stop your brain or stop putting stuff into your brain for this. So that's really, really big.
I love that because we tell ourselves, oh, I just need a little break. But what you're breaking is your ability to get a little movement in, get outside, literally let your mind roam. All you're doing is shifting your focus from the thing that you don't feel like working on to something else. It's not actually a break, is it? And it's super addictive. And it will also deprive us of having legitimate interaction with other people.
Yeah.
Because it gives this kind of a false sense of connection because we see what other people are doing. We know what other people are doing. But it's not really connection. You'd be much better off just either going for a walk or sending a quick, text to somebody and they give you like emoji back. That's an actual connection, even if you're using the damn phone, but better off put it down. More and more people are really realizing that having these phones always available, it is like the path of least resistance when we're bored. When we're lonely, when we are maybe a little bit anxious or agitated or
frustrated.
So it's kind of like a freaking pacifier when you think about it. We're not actually taking a break. What we're doing is we are distracting ourselves from whatever discomfort that we are feeling. And that's usually boredom, loneliness, or just some level of frustration. And by shifting it over to the phone, we're creating a dependency. I'm sure you know this, Alan. There are legitimate residential treatment programs for internet and phone addiction. Like they're literally treating it like a drug or alcohol problem because there are people that get so attached and dependent on that phone that it literally takes over their whole life. So we got a few other things that we want to talk about with respect to screen sucking. And I think one of them you talk about in your ebook is it's sort of like the intersection of sleep and screen sucking, which is this whole phenomenon of like bedtime FOMO and revenge.
Yes.
I love this term, revenge bedtime procrastination. That sounds intense.
And this is an increasingly popular term. I want to just very quickly circle back to this daytime use of social media. And something that I learned from a guy named Merlin Mann, who used to work at Google and is kind of an influencer, he coined the phrase email inbox zero. Brilliant guy. And he says, how about if we did this? How about if with regard to social media, we're not going to walk away from social media, right? How about giving yourself guilt-free time to do the social media? Just identify a time. And so my guilt-free time was at night after I did my Duolingo and before I started my reading, I would give myself 10, 15 minutes to just do Instagram. But again, I stopped doing it because I wasn't getting value and I was just really stealing 10, 15 minutes of sleep from myself. But just consider that. Consider if instead of reaching for this thing and jumping on to different apps, that you said, you know what? I'm going to allow myself to do that without the guilt because we always feel guilty after we've done it, right? Give yourself guilt-free time, maybe at 4 p.m. or some mentally weak time. All right. That's a neat little solution.
I'm glad you brought that up because that's something that I also recommend to clients as well. Position it as a reward rather than a distraction. Keep it time limited. And pay attention to whether or not you are feeling the value? Because I want to touch on this real quickly before we move on. You said you gave yourself that guilt-free time on Instagram in the evening for 15 minutes. All of that is exactly what we've been talking about. It's strategic. It's not, you know, random. You decide right. which app, when you're going to do it, how long you're going to do it. But what interests me is that you recognized, I'm not getting value from this. Tell me how you recognized that.
Well, first of all, as a former drug addict, I've long known that this behavior is hitting the same dopamine circuit as cocaine was for me for the 5 or so years of my life that I lost. Now, by the way, I was undiagnosed and I was self-medicating. So that explains that.
Yeah.
So what I just started to realize is that at some point, the algorithm starts feeding you the same stuff, of course, because it wants you to stay in there and it just wants you to keep thumbing one more, you know, swipe to try to hit that jackpot again, right? That's what you do when you're a drug addict. You just keep trying one more dose so you can try to get that first buzz. So that's what I started to identify with. And I just realized this isn't rewarding me in the way that it used to. And I've just got better things to do with my time, really. So that's where it really came from.
No, that totally makes sense. And something you mentioned earlier that I don't think we got to dig into too much is that the number of people who say, yeah, but you don't understand, like, you know, my spouse works nights or the kids are in bed and I need to be quiet. And what am I supposed to do with the fact that I get this second wind or I feel like I've worked all day and I really haven't had any me time or fun time. Yeah. And I don't want to just like piss that away by going to bed like a good little boy. Like, what would you say?
Yeah. So that brings us back to the revenge procrastination, right? So I've been working all day, or I've been, especially for a busy mom or parent in the home, especially that works and then attends to the family as well. You know, I've been serving other people all day. Now it is 9 p.m. or 10 p.m. The kids are asleep
or
whatever. And now it's my time. I get to have revenge and I'm going to procrastinate on, you know, going to sleep. Needless to say, what we are doing is we are depriving ourselves of sleep, et cetera, and then all the other negative stuff we talk about with regard to social media. Also, there's a FOMO happening here. You sort of alluded to that. It's like, you know, I don't want to shut off my thing because I just want to see what I want to read more of the headlines. Or if I go to sleep, you know, somebody once said fairly recently, they said, sleeping is boring. Sleep is boring. There's nothing in it for me, you know, kind of thing.
Or you can sleep when you're dead, right? That was another.
You can sleep when you're dead. Yeah. And that brings us actually to that ADHD late night second wind too.
Yes.
So a lot of my clients have this thing happen and they have one, of course, they have a long to-do list that with a bunch of undone things.
Mm.
And so they justify, well, I've got energy. We talked about this before, right? I've got energy, so let me do something.
Yes.
Of course, what you're doing is you're firing up all you're working in the internal house lights, which is telling you that it's daytime and it's 10 o'clock at night. And you're just doing the reverse of your circadian rhythm. You're fighting your circadian rhythm and you're better off just letting that energy dissipate by picking up a book, getting in bed, lowering the lights and reading. And then if you're feeling so behind on stuff, here's an idea. And I'm not being a wise guy here. Seriously, here's an idea. Get to sleep and get up 1 hour earlier.
Mm.
And just start banging stuff out earlier in the day.
That makes so much sense.
that's part of my whole thing. And it has been for some time. I know that, first of all, my mentally strongest time is in the morning.
Same.
Right? I'm worthless in the afternoon. Most 62 or some percent of humans have their strongest time in the morning.
Yeah.
So I know that if at 7 a.m., I can work like a monster, right? So if I sleep till 8, I've just lost to work an hour of precious, strong time, work time. I don't want that for myself. So, you know, to go back to that 8:30 alarm that used to say lights down, now it says media off. We're in bed at 9, my wife and I. We're in bed at 9 and hopefully asleep by 10 so I can wake up at 6:37. And get some protein in me and then get up to the attic, which is where I do my focused work, my writing, and just get to work. And then it's 9 o'clock and I feel like, oh my God, I got so much done. And it's only 9 o'clock. How's that for an ADD or feeling like that? Well, that's just by going to bed earlier, recognizing that I'm not missing out on anything and recognizing the power of working in my strong time. And it's life-changing. It's life-changing.
Well, it's really the ultimate hack because you paid attention to what your body needs and when your body works best. You figured out what's good for my brain and what isn't. You actually built some systems and strategies around that, a lot of which are in your award-winning ADD Crusher program. And you've learned how to work with your ADHD brain and not make things harder for it. I know that a lot of people, you know, will say, well, that sounds good for you. You've been at this for a while. You've built your entire business around it. And you walk your talk. That's obvious. But for somebody who's like, I'm not doing any of these things. I know I should, but ever since the pandemic, it's really been a lot of, you know, I hear this from a lot of people. But in truth, nobody goes from the couch to elite athlete overnight. Nobody goes from a drug addict to crushing their ADD overnight. Everybody can start somewhere. And I know you have a system that you use to look at like three things, like diet, exercise, and sleep, and ask yourself simple, simple question and literally take one simple step. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate what you just said, which, you know, look for the 1% gain, man. You know, nothing big happens like we see on TV. Not, you know, the Greatest Loser or whatever, where they're, I just lost 100 pounds in 3 years. That is just very, very rare. We make progress 1 percentage point at a time. So anyway, so here's a way to go and get 1% of a gain. So I got this, just a little quiz that I invite folks to do with regard to sleep, diet, sleep, exercise, which really they're the foundations of battling with our ADHD. It's the foundation. Forget about meds. Yes, I take meds, but if I weren't doing diet, exercise, sleep, I'd be having to take more meds, or the meds wouldn't be of any help at all.
Right. Okay.
So diet, sleep. So what I invite folks to do is rate yourself. And we talked about what some of the positive things, you know, positive ways to have, maintain a diet, some simple things to do with your exercise, some simple sleep hygiene things. Just rate yourself based on those criteria and whatever other criteria you want to apply. Rate yourself 0 to 10. 0 sucks. 10 is amazing on diet. Just first number that comes in your head. Do this right now.
Okay, I'm going to do it too.
What's my number?
All right.
All right?
Yeah.
Okay. And just write that down. Write that number down. And then exercise. Are you breaking a little bit of a sweat 3 times a week? Or are you getting out moving X times a week? Or whatever whatever you want to judge yourself. 0 to 10, first number that comes into your head, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you really suck at this, give yourself a 3 or whatever. And then sleep. Are you getting 7-8 hours of sleep? Yes or no? And just rate yourself 0 to 10 on that. And here's what you do then. Look at the 3 numbers and circle the one that's lowest. Mm-hmm. And then all you want to do, talking about 1% gain, all you want to do is identify, and maybe you can do that right now. All right. So my worst is the diet. Let's just say I'm at a 3 on diet. Okay. What's one thing you can start doing that will maybe get that 3 up to a 5? By the way, a 3 to a 5 is a, what is that? A 67% increase. So you're getting more than 1%.
Yeah.
Okay. But just see if you can get up from a 3 to a 5 or from a 7 to an 8 or a 5 to a 7 or whatever, based on one thing. Put that on a sticky, put that sticky on your forehead or wherever you'll see it, and work that for a couple weeks. That's where you begin.
I didn't expect you to slam that post-it note on your forehead. I love that.
I use little stickies to remind myself of particular things I'm working on at the time. I'm a big fan of the sticky.
You know what I love about this, Ellen, is that you're not saying, okay, your diet needs improvement, your exercise needs improvement, and your sleep needs improvement. So you're going to create this 10-step plan for each of them, and you're going to track it. You're going to get one of those special rings that monitors all your bodily functions. It's like, no, you're not. You're not going to do any of that. You know you're not. So let's just do the one thing where improvement will make the biggest difference, because it's on the low side. Pick that one thing and take one action, and maybe practice that action for a couple of weeks, because we always have that 2-week cliff. You know, we have the best of intentions. We start strong. There's something about the 2-week mark that we just fall right off the freaking cliff. So if you can maintain it for a couple of weeks, then do something else, but just keep going. And it all adds up. It all counts. Ellen, you and I are both self-employed. We are both entrepreneurs. We both work with people with ADHD in different ways. And probably a lot of the people that you know and talk to and interact with also have ADHD, but you got to know some normies. You got to know some neurotypicals. What would you like them to know? The neurotypical folks who are entrepreneurs, what don't they know about ADHD that can actually be a business advantage? I bet you have a lot of ideas about this.
I do. I'm going to try to keep it to one thing. I'm going to do 1.5.
I might let you get away with 3. Just start. Go.
The first thing is risk taking. Mm. I know you entrepreneurs out there, ADHD or not, you have to be a risk taker. But I think ADHD, we're impulsive. We're illogical. We don't think things through.
We're like, Lord knows, how hard can it be? Let's just do it.
You know, I've just done it. I've changed my career like 4 times or something every 10 years.
Yep.
I dived into a startup with 2 partners years ago and ended up paying off handsomely. I dove into this. I left a very profitable career in advertising, et cetera, to do what I'm doing now. So that's one thing. The other one is that we have, and I alluded to this before, we don't have the linear thinking brain. We have the synaptic brain. It goes here, there, everywhere. And that is a beautiful thing because we get ideas. We can be problem solvers. The challenge, and all this is directed to our ADHD friends, the challenge is to manage your life, first and foremost, your health, sleep, exercise, and other things, and use other solutions that you've learned to make sure that that synaptic thinking can be channeled into something that is useful that you can actually follow up on and move forward on. So that's my shtick.
Brilliant. Now, we promised people 5 things that you're doing that make your ADHD worse. But for those that are still with us, we really only talked about 3. We talked about sugar, we talked about sleep, and we talked about screen sucking. You have written a lovely, very practical and tactical ebook about the 5 things. And I think people probably want to hear the other 2. So how do they get a hold of that booklet?
Yeah. So you can find me at addcrusher.com. This is a virtual coach program created. Got some awards for that. But on the page, at the very top of the page, you'll see a little strip that invites you to grab that ebook. You can also scroll down to the bottom and it will just show you the little thing where you can enter your email. This is like a 5-pager ebook covering all 5 of these things. Obviously, some of what we've been talking about will be reiterated, but also 2 other things that we are all doing every day.
Guaranteed.
It makes our ADHD worse. Guaranteed. And so I think you will find it of interest and hopefully find it of some help. ADDCrusher.com.
Yeah. And you're a very modest guy. I mean, Alan's not only got this ebook and he's obviously a wonderful guest on the podcast. He's got ADD Crusher, which is an award-winning program. He's a TEDx speaker. Go to his website, check him out. He's got a lot of great resources. Thank you so much for joining us today, Alan.
Thanks for having me. And thanks everybody for listening.
So before you go, don't forget to grab Alan's ebook. And if you love hard-hitting solo episodes, client success stories, and inspiring guest interviews like this one, make sure you leave a review on Apple or Spotify. There are links to do both in the show notes. And hey, thanks.